Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and this week we again have a double reading, Parashat Achrimot and Parashat Kedushim. You've probably seen this or maybe even been part of it. The music starts at a wedding. The young couple comes in. People flood the dance floor, and for a moment, it's just chaos. Everyone is moving, but different rhythms, different energies, people bumping into each other. And then almost just as quickly, it shifts. Hands grab, circles form, the steps align. There's a shared rhythm. It's not just movement, it's unified dancing. The death of Nadav and Avihu in Parshat Shemini felt anything but harmonious. They brought a foreign fire, an act of spiritual intensity, but one that was out of sync, out of rhythm, uncommanded. And then, almost jarringly, the Torah shifts from that burst of uncontrolled movement into the deeply structured laws of purity. Now, in the shadow of that moment in Parashat Achrimot, everything begins to move again, but this time it's choreographed. Aaron enters the Mishkan not with spontaneity, but with precision, step by step, offering by offering. In fact, he's told to bring his offering in the same form his sons attempted, fire on a pan of coals. As long as it's done as Hashem prescribed, life emerges and Hashem's presence is revealed. And the Torah repeats a single word like a steady musical refrain, kapara, kapara, kapara. Atonement for himself, for his household, for the entire nation. It's a symphony of return, where each korban is another note, another action, another movement, carefully arranged after chaos, until it ends in reconciliation and the embrace of Yom Kippur itself. Within that structure sits the quiet center of the entire choreography, the service of the incense. The Yom Kippur service in the Mikdash reaches its most intense point when the Kohen Gadol enters the innermost space, the Kodesh Kodeshim, carrying fire and incense, but without the cloud yet formed. V'natan et haketoret al ha'esh lifnei Hashem. He shall put the incense on the fire before God. V'kisa anan haketoret et hakaporet asher al ha'edut. So that the cloud from the incense screens the cover that is over the ark with the tablets. Enter the Tzedukim's argument. The Tzedukim group, that included many Kohanim during the time of the Second Temple, were part of the societal and religious elite with access and authority to the Mikdash. They denied the validity of the Oral Torah and instead interpreted Torah literally based on their own understanding. Interestingly, this Ketoret offering of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur was a main argument of Tzedukim, who insisted that the incense should be burned and the cloud from it must already surround the Kohen Gadol before entry. Based on the Oral Torah, Moshe taught that the cloud is specifically created inside the Kodesh Kodeshim, in the presence of Hashem. The Kohen Gadol doesn't arrive with the arrogance of a completed service. Rather humbly, he arrives with potential, and the encounter itself generates the revelation. The holiest moment is therefore not pre-composed outside the space, but composed within it, like a living movement that unfolds in real time. And so the symphony reaches its deepest truth. When it is brought wholeheartedly before Hashem, even fire is transformed into harmony. Looking again at the Tzedukim's perspective from another angle, they saw themselves as the keepers of the Kodesh and said that they wanted to protect Hashem's space and his honor. Create a cloud of smoke outside the Kodesh so that no one should see in. The cloud should create a barrier, they said. This seems quite lofty, except when you realize the ramifications. If all of spirituality is within the Kodesh and we are blocked from even seeing it, where does that leave us in our daily lives? Ultimately, the Tzedukim are lost to the Jewish people after the destruction of the Second Temple. Our daily lives are based on the oral law that they rejected, spiritual practice that everyone can connect to, where we each play a part in the symphony. Of course, that takes us to the most harmonious of all chapters, Chapter 19, Parashat Kedushim. The Midrash describes this as Hakel, the entire congregation, men, women, and children of all ages, gathered together to hear the fundamental elements of Torah. You shall be holy, kedoshim to you, just as I am holy, ki kadosh ani. Kedoshim to you, Moshe turns to the entire community and tells them in plural, you will be holy, because Hashem is kadosh, holy in singular. Kadosh ani, like a solo note, pure and self-contained, the oneness of Hashem that needs nothing beyond itself. But kedoshim to you is written in plural, because we are not a solo. A person is not supposed to isolate himself to achieve holiness. Alone we can make sounds. Together, as Kol Adat Bnei Yisrael, the entire community of the children of Israel, we become the music of Kedusha. We are a holy symphony, a dance of many souls moving in rhythm with one another. This is a radical change from the world's perception of holiness. We don't achieve holiness in a temple. Holiness can't be actualized, as the Tzedukim said, in the inner sanctuary, but rather only in daily living. We're commanded to be holy in the streets, in our homes, in stores, in fields and communal buildings, in our roles as parents, children, neighbors, leaders, teachers, business owners, and community members. And the Torah doesn't leave this as a vague ideal. It gives it structure and shape. Embedded within these laws in our parsha are the Ten Commandments, translated into daily reality as living guidance for everyday life. Do not turn to idols. Keep Shabbat. Laws of how to treat our parents. Do not stand by your brother's blood. Do not steal. Be honest in business. Do not be a talebearer. Do not covet. Perhaps the most famous, love your fellow as yourself. Ve'ahavta le'recha kamocha. You cannot achieve holiness on your own. The proverbial isolated mountaintop meditation? No. Rather, kiddushim to you, elevate your society to holiness. I'd like to take a step back. Rav Noach Weinberg, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Eishet Torah, would often challenge people, define your terms. Rav Noach once responded to someone who claimed he didn't see any holiness in Israel by asking him, how many befuftziks did you see? When the man objected that the question made no sense, he didn't even know what a befuftzik was. Rav Noach smiled and said, exactly. If you don't know what something is, you can't recognize it, even if it's right in front of you. Were you expecting barefoot angels in the streets or some glowing light from the rocks? If you don't know what holiness actually is, you won't see it, even when you're surrounded by it. And that's our challenge with Kedusha. Before we can seek it or see it, we have to define what it is. We need to define holiness. When the Torah requires us, Kedoshim to you, be holy, what does that mean? If the commentators are the harmony to the symphony of Torah, let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. The straightforward reader of the text, Rashi. Kedoshim to you, be holy. Hevu prushim min ha'arayot u'min ha'avera. Be separated from illicit sexual activity and from sin. The Midrash in Torat Kohanim states that Kedoshim to you, be holy, means prushim to you, be separated. Separate from what? That's the question. In Rashi's opinion, to be holy means to be separated from illicit sexuality and sins in general. Holiness is developed by putting up boundaries. Live with an awareness of limitations, an awareness of what is forbidden to you. We might think that life without boundaries would be the ultimate. You can seemingly do anything, a free-flowing dance. But let's honestly ask, would we achieve our best living a life with no boundaries? Even the most graceful, perhaps especially the most graceful dance, needs rules. Rashi is teaching us that if we want to develop the ultimate society that will be an example for all, build a society with clear guidelines as to what is right and what is not. Have a society based on hevu prushim, living with boundaries. Specifically using the example of sexuality, maybe he is saying that this is the epitome of behavior that without limitations, people would lose their humanity, and we see examples of pornography and abuse, but within guidelines, we see the most beautiful of marriages. A holy society has built a protective wall around itself with clear laws of what is allowed and what is forbidden. Parush, separated, putting up boundaries. But the next question is where? How do we put the boundaries? How far do we take this? Let's gain clarity what it means to be parush, separated, so that we can be holy. In many religions, the physical world is seen as evil and must be avoided at all costs in order to be holy. Vows of poverty, vows of chastity, vows of silence, absolute abstinence so that one can focus completely on the spiritual. Rashi is not talking about asceticism. When Rashi uses the word pulshim, he specifies, be separated from sin. When we look in classic sources to understand what pulshim means, we find a midrash in Tehillim 137, describing the mindset of some people after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. At the time, there were many people who called themselves pulshim. They separated from life. They didn't eat milk or drink wine because meat had been brought on the altar and wine had been poured there. How could they celebrate? Meat and wine are for joyous temple times. Rabbi Yoshua sees them and responds cynically but honestly. You could stop eating figs and grapes that were brought as bikurim. Stop eating bread that was elevated as lechem apanim. Don't drink water since it was poured on Sukkot. By your rationale, we can't live life at all. They were stunned and silenced. Rabbi Yoshua then answers the conundrum and says, not to mourn at all is impossible, but to mourn too much is also not plausible. Holiness requires us to find a rhythm that honors spirituality but lives in reality. And we go on to learn the balance, which fittingly, I wish I could sing now. If I forget you, Yerushalayim, may my right hand wither. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yimini. Let my tongue stick to my palate if I don't remember you. Tidbak leshoni lechiki im lo eskerechi. If I do not bring up Yerushalayim above my highest joy. Im lo alet Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. The prerequisite, so to speak, is to use my right arm, is to talk, is to have simcha. Then we bring Yerushalayim to the forefront. Rabbi Yehoshua teaches these misguided people how to live in the boundaries. You will live, he says. Get married, have children, make great feasts. And in all those moments, that's when you remember Yerushalayim. And the customs we know till today developed from this idea. We get married, break a glass, build a home, leave an unfinished area. At each meal, we say Al Ne'arot Bavel. To be holy means to live, but with an awareness and guidelines. The Ramban, as he often does, quotes Rashi and disagrees with him. The Ramban takes us in a different direction in understanding what it means to be Purushim. He describes people who might live within what is permitted, but live in a disgusting way. On the face of it, they've done nothing wrong, and they've kept all the laws, but you look at them, and you see a despicable person. Legal, but immoral. Ramban calls them Naval Birshut HaTorah, a degenerate in the boundaries of Torah. The Torah has just finished giving us laws of things that are strictly forbidden, laws of kosher, laws of relationship. But holiness, the Ramban says, is above and beyond what has already been said. It's not just to live in a world of black and white. There's a whole spectrum of behavior the person must be careful in to be holy. For me, this seems harder. It's like dancing on a balance beam. You can eat, but not too much. Speak, but beware of negative conversations. Find the sweet spot. You'll know when you're there. Kedushim is a commandment to live a life of balance and refinement. In the Ramban's words, Kadesh Atzmecha b'mutar lecha. Don't push the boundary. Behave in an elevated way within what's permitted. During World War II years, the Hussiatin Rebbe from the Royal Ruzhin Hasidus, Rabbi Yaakov Friedman, led his community from Tel Aviv. His book, Ole Yaakov, reflects a profound spiritual response to the war. He questions how a person can become holy with what is permitted. Kadesh Atzmecha b'mutar lecha. This is usually understood, as we have said, as holding back even from things that are permitted. Eat only one helping of ice cream. Don't speak if it's not necessary. The Hussiatin Rebbe adds, make yourself holy can also mean positive actions. In your life full of endless possibilities, whatever you decide to do, do it in a holy way. As the Shem to you, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokechem, because I, your eternal God, is holy. Or, Ki Kadosh Ani, be holy as I am holy. Be God-like, to stay human in this physical world, but to enhance the godliness within us, our Tzelem Elokim. Live with a constant awareness that I am created in the image of God. Since God engages with the world, so must we, to behave in a godly way in my heart, mind, and body. Interestingly, the example that the Hussiatin Rebbe brings is to be aesthetic. I would venture to say that many of us, actually, I will only speak for myself. When I go to get a manicure, to get a haircut, I don't sit down and say, L'shem kutsha brichu, hineni mukhan u'mezuman, I am prepared and ready to observe the mitzvah of kedushim to you. Until now, I've gone to take good care of my externals because I want to look good. The new perspective here is that kedushim to you also applies to my physical existence, to take care of my appearance and present myself in the most beautiful way possible, to step into the world with the awareness that I am a tzelem Elokim, I am godly. Chazal actually taught this in the Talmud when they point out that the word kadosh, holy, appears three times in a verse for three different actions we should do. Chapter 11, verse 44. V'itkadashtem v'item kedoshim ki kadosh ani. Sanctify yourselves, become holy. The Talmud says, refers to ma'im rishonim, wash netilat yadayim before you eat. And you shall be holy, v'item kedoshim, refers to ma'im achronim, washing hands after the meal. In times and places where people didn't use cutlery, after eating, everyone had to wash their hands before saying any brachot. The meal is technically over. And then the Talmud adds something beautiful, the third kadosh, ki kadosh ani, because I am holy. This refers to the oil that people would rub on their hands after the meal. Ancient scented moisturizer. Before getting up from an elaborate meal, they would apply a fragranced oil. Why? To be holy. Because to be holy is to be aesthetic. To be holy is to be beautified as an image of Hashem. The Midrash tells us the most amazing story. The students of Hillel saw him going to the bathhouse, not for a shower, but as a spa, like the Roman-style bathhouses we see in ancient ruins. He told them, I'm going to do a mitzvah. You can imagine the looks of astonishment mixed with shock and confusion. Hillel explains that just as countries sculpt statues of leaders and even appoint special people to wash them and polish the marble, our bodies are Tzelem Elokim and must be honored. Through the lens of Hasidish love of Hashem and of people, we are taught to develop an awareness of beauty, an awareness of aesthetics, of health and fitness, an awareness of cleanliness, and we must do this with the understanding and appreciation that we are godly. Kedoshim to you, holy. Holiness is not a place we arrive at. It's a way we move. It's a choreography. a dance where different elements shape how we live step by step. When a dancer first steps onto the stage before any movement, there is space, boundaries, edges, knowing where you can go and where you cannot. This is Rashi speaking. Holiness begins with separation from what's forbidden. There's a legal system, a clear structure of right or wrong, permitted or not. The first element of holiness is the disciplined awareness of those lines and the commitment not to cross them. Without that stage, there's no dance at all. There's just chaos. But of course, a dancer doesn't stay still on a stage. Once the space is defined, there is rhythm, there is timing, there's a pulse that carries the movement forward. That's how the Midrash helps us understand holiness. We're not meant to withdraw from the world. We live engaged in the world, fully present. And there's a rhythm to how we live, a higher structure, a spiritual timing that guides our movement so that life is not random, but aligned. A dancer isn't just on the stage moving to a beat. They're choosing how to move. Every step matters. Every gesture carries meaning, says the Ramban. He teaches that holiness is not just about staying within what is technically permitted. One can live entirely within the law and still be what he calls a naval birshut haTorah, a degenerate within the boundaries of Torah. So holiness demands more. It asks us to refine even the permitted. Not just is this allowed, but is this elevated? Is this dignified? Is this who I want to be? Above and beyond the systematic movement, it's about posture, the flowing movements and precise steps. And in every dance, there's an added dimension. Dance is not only structure and movement, it's also expression. The way the dancer carries themselves, the grace, the presence, the aesthetic. Holiness includes the way we honor the image of God within us with dignity, care, and awareness of both body and soul. That's how we present ourselves in the world. It can itself be an expression of something higher. Living a life of purity is clarity of body and soul, a sense of being unclouded and aligned. Holiness is the movement that follows, consciously carrying that forward and translating it into the way we act, choose, and engage with the world. It's the awareness of stepping into the music and moving with rhythm. Each decision is another note shaping a life that becomes, step by step, a dance of holiness.